Okay, folks, welcome to the latest episode of Life on Planet Porky. Yes, trying to keep you in touch with what happens, not in the real world, but in the world of the planet. And where would the planet be, of course, without its most famous resident, Ms. Leslie Ann Jones, rock chick writer extraordinaire. Leslie Ann, good morning to you. I was passing down a high street the other day, nipped into Waterstones. Lo and behold, there on the shelf in the new and bestseller section was the book about John Lennon.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear it. I'm loving all the photos that people are sending me from their local Waterstones, yep. Showing, you know, strategic position. And if it isn't, they pull it to the front, which is so sweet.
Exactly, I know. And that's, you know, that might sound like a dirty dog trick, but it's not. It's just a battle to get your book to the imagination and to the eye of the reader. How's it going anyway? The sales are
really well. Yeah, yep. Superb. The publisher are very pleased. The foreign editions are rolling out now. So I think Italian, Croatian, Hungarian all came this week, and Polish next week. The American edition on the 1st of December. So I'm doing US interviews at the moment, which is
brilliant.
Fun. Yeah.
Yes, it is. Of course, it's great fun. Now, I understand also that, never mind writing about rock stars, you were doing a bit of sort of rock and roll yourself last night, weren't you?
Well, I was in the audience, where, you might say, because we have no venues open right now. Well, my son, who's a musical theatre graduate, managed to swing a gig at the Palmerston in East Dulwich, close to where we live. And he and his friend Billy Roberts from school, who's a bit of a whiz on the keys, did a fantastic sort of jazz-based gig in the pub. It was a dinner gig. So you book dinner, you sit there, have a three-course meal, bottle of wine, blah, blah, blah. And then throughout the evening, they get up and Henry was telling little stories, quite funny, actually. I didn't realize he was so amusing. And then singing, and they had a special guest, an amazing girl called Karen, who got up and did a couple of numbers and did a duet with Henry. And it was superb. And I had forgotten how much I was missing live music. It's been a big part of my life, for all of my life. And I was in the habit of going to gigs at least twice a week for years. So to actually be able to go out to experience live music last night was such a treat. And I look forward to doing it again.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely smashing. You say book for dinner. I found a loophole yesterday, which I had to enforce. I needed to meet people from a radio station, right? Talk radio, actually. And there were things we had to do in the studio, but then we had to get out and really talk about things. We went to a pub where we discovered that if you were having a legitimate business meeting, then two people could sit at the same table who didn't come from the same household. And that's, you know, that's not a way around it. That is a legitimate option to, and the premises actually put it to us. Well, if it's a genuine business meeting, you can sit at the table. But if you're not having a business meeting, you can't just socialise together. I mean, it's a bit odd, that, isn't it?
It's a crazy loophole, and it's really annoying me because people all around me are saying, oh, do you realise, you know, if we say we're having a business meeting, we can just meet up. Well, that is not making the virus go away.
No.
That's putting people more at risk. So I don't understand why they've come up with this.
But I was having a business meeting. I was discussing, you know, program planning and schedules and all that sort of stuff. So surely I was entitled to it, wasn't I?
You were entitled by law. But the thing is, you're vulnerable, Mike. You know, your heart is operating on three cylinders, shall we say.
I'm glad my heart works.
You know, it's you've got to be careful because you're exposing yourself to people who are not in your bubble.
Well, yeah, I know, but I have a kind of different view on it. I mean, look, we're all facing some very, very gloomy weeks ahead by the look of it, aren't we? I mean, France
is locked down again now. Germany is locked down again now. So I think anybody who thinks that our country is not heading for that has got their head in the sand.
Well, you may well be right, but, you know, I've seen some of the newspapers this morning, the headlines are so stark. Don't panic, you know, don't give in. And the economic situation is so perilous. Only 17 people under the age of 40 have been recorded of dying of COVID. So that's, you know, that puts into absolute focus exactly what we need to do, and that's protect the vulnerable. But I think we should let the rest of people get on with their lives.
It's a good point that you make. I mean, the thing is, people will say younger people are not dying of it. Mostly they're not. Yeah. But a lot of them are asymptomatic and a lot of them are passing it on to older people who are dying of it.
Yeah, well, you see, this is the problem, isn't it? How do we separate the two? You know, they have to lock up all people or whatever. I don't know. But anyway,
I don't think we're ready to be locked up, are we?
Well, I'm certainly not ready to be locked up now. Although some would say it's time I was. Talking about that, by the way, you must have seen this report from Norway, which has just arrived on our shores, which basically says that at 54, you're finished. That's it. It's all over. Your get up and go has got up and gone. Would you agree with that, Miss Jones?
Well, obviously not. Otherwise, I wouldn't be sitting here. But it's a funny thing about the Norwegians. I do know a little bit about these people. They're very interesting, the Norwegians. Their emphasis is definitely on youth in their culture.
Right.
But they are very cool people. Have you ever come across any?
Norwegians? Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, manager of Manchester United. That's about it. I mean, they're very Anglophile, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And it's interesting that they do, most of them speak English better than we do,
yes,
in terms of grammatical correctness and so on.
Yeah.
They're very cool people. They're very tolerant. Mm. They conform. They mostly dress the same, if you've noticed, and they wear their hair the same and that kind of thing. They're not complainers. They have a very good sense of humour. Mm-hmm. They hate the Swedes.
Yeah.
They drink. I suppose because a lot of people confuse Norway and Sweden. They think they're the same place.
Yeah, well, what's
wrong
with that?
They're very different in terms of their culture.
Well, they're all Scandinavian. Scandinavian.
Yeah, that doesn't make them all the same. But they drink a lot. And alcohol's very expensive in Norway.
That's what I thought. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, but the level of intoxication on the streets is horrifying. It's worse than Liverpool. You know, vomit every few paces.
Good God, really?
They're good people. What else is there to do? You know, it's dark a lot of the time, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I think they're very loyal, very loving, very musical people.
Yes.
Surprisingly. And here's an interesting fact. They tend to buy their homes, their flats, when they're very young. They hate wasting money on rent.
Right.
So maybe that's a key to it.
Maybe it is. Maybe by the time they got 54, they think that, you know, like almost 40 years of occupation in their own house is enough. It's funny what you say about the drink. I've never been to Norway. I've been to Sweden. No, I haven't. Where have I been? I can't remember. Sweden. That's right, Sweden. Denmark. No, sorry, it's Denmark. I'm awfully sorry. I like
Scandinavia. They're all the same place.
Yeah, but
you're one of those.
The reason I've been to Denmark is I've been there twice and both times for football matches, you know, because England have played Denmark. And Copenhagen, wonderful Copenhagen. Yeah, I love Copenhagen. I think it's great. And I thought they were all kind of the same. But years ago, when we used to go on these highly responsible holidays to Benidorm to see if you could prove the old adage that was always buzzing around the pubs in England, is it possible to drink yourself sober? And of course, we would try that for 2 weeks to see if it was, you know what I mean?
It's not, right?
It's not, no. There's this, you know, this mad sort of, you know, local myth. Oh, no, if you go on drinking long enough, you actually drink yourself back to sobriety. Well, believe me, we tried it a few times. It didn't work. But what I was going to say is that, of course, lots of, like, millions of young English people flocked over to the Costas and misbehaved badly, but never as badly as the Scandinavians. And that's because, you're absolutely right, drink is so expensive back in Scandinavia, they don't very often go out on a two-day bender because they can't afford it.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, that's probably their government trying to control their drinking, I would say.
Yeah, I would say so. But believe me, they made up for it when they got to Benidorm. They were literally known as the worst possible people to keep under control. But anyway, they're all very good-looking Scandinavians. That's the one thing I like about them.
Yes, they are. Very beautiful specimens. Do you remember, the band? Can't even speak. Do you remember the band, A-ha?
A-ha. Yes, I do. Yeah.
Take on me.
I remember them, but the one I really remember, because it's such a stupid name for a song, was Hocus Focus by Pocus.
Oh, yeah.
Or was it Hocus Focus by Pocus?
Something like that, but it was a good little ditty, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And there have been a few other sort of Scandinavian bands, ABBA, of course, being one of the greatest of all time, but there we are, that's what happens. Now, the world's got a monumental decision to make next Tuesday, Ms. Jones, US election. No, it's Wednesday, isn't it? Tuesday. And everything's pointing at the moment to Sleepy Joe Biden probably becoming the next president of the United States of America. But people I talk to in America, and I do all the time, still think that Trump's going to come in again on the blind side.
Yes, they do. I have a client in New York who I'm working with, and she actually raves about Trump.
Right.
And
you say that, as though this is a disgraceful thing for her to do.
Well, I'm not to judge. You know, I'm not going to sit here and pass judgment on my client. But from the outside world, from where we're sitting, it's very easy to see all the bad things about Trump. But you're stuck in that country. You've got a vote. You've got a choice. It's that way or that way.
Yeah.
I think people are seeing things rather differently over there.
Well, I think that it's the age of the silent majority. And, you know, that's how Boris Johnson got an 80-seat majority here. That was never predicted by the polls and all that. And I think people are a bit the same in America. I mean, look, Trump has many faults. We all know that. But he did avoid war with North Korea, which was what America was heading to when Obama left office. And he has done things which, you know, have been, well, they show the firm smack of management, put it that way. It might not always be the right smack of management, but he's very decisive. And what worries me about Biden, Sleepy Joe, as he's called by Trump, is that he clearly confused who he was up against 3 nights ago when he started calling him George.
He's too old, isn't he? I mean, I'm not ageist as a rule. I don't think a man of his vintage can be running the most powerful country in the world.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. Now, talking about powerful men, right? I've always been of the opinion that John Lennon, the subject of your book, of course, was largely responsible for the fall of the Soviet Union, because once they started smuggling Beatles records across the Berlin Wall, it was all over. However, Mikhail Gorbachev, no less, the last independent ruler of Soviet Russia or the USSR, has actually admitted that it was J.R. Ewing who brought down the Berlin Wall, and that as soon as videotapes of Dallas made their way into Russia and young people saw them and the middle classes in Russia saw the sort of opulence that the Americans lived in, that was the end of the game. I mean, can you imagine that J.R. Ewing, who's not even a real person, ended the communist bloc empire, which lasted 80 years?
But we completely get his point, don't we? Because it's about American values, materialism, wealth, the importance of family. And a lot of families at that time were divided by the war.
Yes. Oh, they were.
And people didn't want that anymore. So, you know, I think Gorbachev's hit the nail on the head here.
Yeah. Well, I believe that the Western influence is what brought it down. I went there about a year and a half, about 18 months before the fall of the wall. I went with Peter Hitchens, who was going to be our Russian correspondent. We got permission to open an office there. And I was over there to help set it up and all that kind of stuff. And without a shadow of a doubt, young people were already gathering in groups on the streets, and I almost predicted the fact that it was going to all end, you know, because Mikhail Gorbachev wanted it to end. He wanted perestroika and glasnost, and he wanted a free society because he thought we can become wealthy. And of course, Russia did become very wealthy. Sadly, about 99% of the wealth of Russia is vested in 1% of the oligarchs.
Do you remember how they promoted his wife, Raisa, as the great sort of Evita of Russia, didn't they?
Yes, they did, yeah, absolutely. Anyway, that was all what happened. Now, tell me, talking about books, tell me about your experiences with Gary Newman, because Gary Newman I've seen on the box a couple of times this week promoting his book. And I remember Gary Newman for Cars as one song, but I can't remember him doing anything else ever.
Oh, he's a great guy, Gary Newman. He was frontman of the new wave band. Do you remember Tube Way Army?
No, I don't remember him for Cars, because it had that odd sort of chord in the middle. Da, 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 da. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. But before that, it was not a bad impersonation, actually. Yeah. Before that, there was Our Friends Electric, which was the first synth-based number one of the electronic era.
Really?
And we loved him because he looked like an android, didn't he? He had mental health problems a bit further down the line. Wow. Yeah, and he sort of went away for about 20 years. And then he married his stalker. There was this girl, Gemma, who used to follow him around.
Really?
And he ended up falling in love with her and marrying her. And she is credited with having turned his career around and brought him back. And he's had this sort of renaissance career since about 2000.
Really? I didn't know that. I didn't know you were still about. Talking about stalkers, by the way, I was devastated when I realised I'd missed a trick. You're talking about stalkers here. And Agnetha of ABBA married her stalker, didn't she?
I didn't know that.
Yes, she did, yeah. What happened was, you know, she wanted to be alone, sort of Greta Garbo style, after the breakup of ABBA. So she bought an island that you could only get to by a footbridge or something, right? Because there's loads of islands in Sweden. Every decent, you know, Swedish businessman's got his own island. Sven Horan Eriksson, the former England manager, he had his own island. And she bought this island. But then this stalker turned up for years. And guess what? She ended up marrying him. So I thought, wow, what an idiot I am. If I'd have gone and stalked Agnetha for a couple of years, I might have ended up marrying her.
Yeah, but then the fantasy would have been destroyed, wouldn't it?
Well, not really.
You probably would have not admired her so much in close quarters because, you know, it's familiarity breeds contempt. That's what I'm trying to say.
Really? Oh, well, if you say so. But nevertheless, it must have been quite an experience. Now, I have to go out again today, Ms. Jones. I was out again yesterday. I have to say, I am absolutely loving the weather at the moment. I love autumn. It's my favourite season. But there's one thing about it which I hate, and I'm sure one of the days I'm going to kill somebody. It's the damned leaf blowers.
Oh, yeah. Now, we talked about those before, didn't we?
Did we?
Yes, I think last year, you know, because this is the time of year for them, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
Well, it's very interesting because I think you were born in January, weren't you?
December,
okay.
December 29th, nearly January.
Yeah, I did a little bit of research about this. The season of your birth has long-term effects on your personality.
Right.
And this is all to do with how our bio clocks function.
Right.
So people born during the winter months have a much higher risk of certain neurological disorders, such as SAD, which is, you know, seasonal affective disorder, or bipolar, or depression, or schizophrenia.
Yeah.
And we do tend to favour the season in which we were born.
Really? Oh,
yes, it's very interesting. It's not astrology, it's biology. Yeah. And if you think about it, of course it's going to be the case, because it's to do with light exposure.
Yeah, listen, that's not a bad idea, that. So I suppose if you're born in the summer, you like the heat, because you were born into a very warm world.
You like the heat, you get plenty of light, you're happier and healthier, you're not so exposed to things like the flu virus.
Yeah, that's true.
So scientifically, you have a better chance of a happy life if you're born during the summer months.
Yeah, I know, I understand that. I don't know why, but I just, the sun repels me.
I've just told you why.
Yes, I know you have, but what I'm saying is a lot of people are born in December. I don't know many people who feel as awkward in sunshine as me. I mean, it's blighted my life. You know, if I was, Alan Brazil and I were away somewhere once in Marbella doing a show there or something like that. And everybody thinks I'm unsocial or unsociable because I don't like sitting out in the sun to have a lovely, you know, lunch lasting 3 or 4 hours with a dozen bottles of wine and eating the local food. I can't sit in the sun. And if they're all sitting there on a big, you know, terrace or something like that, I just have to leave them and go indoors. And people have mistaken me for being, you know, snobbish and, oh, you know, you think you're special because you're working on radio. I said, no, I don't. I can't stand the sun. It brings me out in rashes. And it's a complaint that's bugged me all my life. Now, I don't know many people who suffer that badly.
Well, I do as well, and I'm freckly like you, and I can't sit in the sun. But, you know, we do have umbrellas and hats and factor 50 and all that.
Yeah, we do.
And long sleeves. All you've got to do is cover up, protect your head, and not drink too much booze when you're sitting in the sun.
Well, listen, I accept all you're saying, but you know as well as I do, Mediterranean coastal places, they don't often have umbrellas because people just don't want them. People don't like sitting in the shade, you know, and they're providing. Anyway, look, that's something I will have to live
with. Well, I know what to buy you for Christmas, a nice big hat.
A nice big hat, that's right, yeah, to go with my Peaky Blinders hat. Now, what I was going to say was, have we talked about what a thorough bore John Cleese is in the past?
Oh, I don't think we have, but he is, isn't he?
Yeah, he's 81 now, right?
And he should give it up, shouldn't he, really?
Well, I think he'll just get more curmudgeonly as he gets older, won't he?
I think it's a sad truth about comedians, aging comedians, really, because comedy, especially the sort of cutting edge comedy, it depends on subversion, doesn't it? And making fun of the establishment and the status quo. But then they become dependent on that establishment and the status quo because that's how they earn their fortunes.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, John Cleese lives on Nevis, I believe, in the Caribbean.
He
bangs on and on about being English and, you know, all the attacks on the British and so on. Yep. But he doesn't actually live here. So what right does he have to comment?
Well, Sir Sean Connery, I think he's knighted, isn't he, Sir Sean Connery, is also exactly the same. I think he lives in the Bahamas, always banging on about Scottish independence, but he doesn't live here and pay any taxes. And despite that, the establishment still rewarded him with a knighthood, but he still bangs on about the country. And it does irritate you, I totally agree.
I think if you were once a committed tormentor of institutions, as Cleese obviously was, and, you know, exposing fakery and small-minded Englishness and all that, you'd better not throw stones in your glass house.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I totally agree. Talking about stones and glass houses and everything, there's a Bond actress called Naomi somebody or other.
Naomi Harris.
Naomi Harris, that's the one. And she's talking this morning about, I hated my time at Cambridge, but it did get me jobs. Now, that's a bit of a juxtaposition, isn't it? Oh, I hated my time at Cambridge. I didn't like being in an elitist institution, but then admits, but actually it's probably because I went to Cambridge that people opened doors for me, which led to me becoming a Bond actress. I mean, what do you think about that sense of privilege that comes out of Oxbridge, that's Oxford and Cambridge?
I think it's vastly misunderstood. Yeah. You know, people don't really understand out there that Oxford and Cambridge are not just two kind of university buildings, like, say, for example, somewhere like Exeter is, but it's a lot of colleges all grouped together under the same umbrella. So there are effectively lots of universities as part of the Oxford or the Cambridge complex. Mm. And there was a sort of downturn when my son was at Dulwich College, you know, certain types of parents were wanting to encourage their children to go to one of those colleges because it made them look good.
Right.
And the kids are turning around going, actually, you know, I don't think it's cool. Mm. I'd rather go to Bristol or Exeter or a Nottingham or somewhere like that.
Yeah.
And I think that people are turned off by the reputation of those colleges, but they are the creme de la creme. They are our most superb seats of learning. And I think you're very fortunate to go there. I would have loved to go to Oxford or Cambridge.
So would I. That's
a great regret of mine. So I think we need to stop attacking these institutions and start valuing them for what they really are.
Well, well spoken, Miss Jones. I totally agree with you. I went for an interview to Brasenose College, Oxford, which is David Cameron's alma mater. And I was going to do politics, philosophy and economics, which is what he did, but it just all became too much for me. I discovered women and drink in my last year at school.
Oh, God. And you could do it now, though. I was chatting to a friend of mine, Simon Greaves, the other day, and he's just graduated in PPE in his 50s. And I said, what made you decide to do it at this stage in the game? He said, I've always wanted to read PPE. And so now I have.
Yeah.
And I have my degree. It's wonderful.
I thought about that very, very briefly, you know, in the last few years at one stage when, you know, your career hits another dip and then, oh, well, it booms again and all that kind of stuff. That's the story of your and our lives, my lives. And I thought, well, yes, I could definitely fund myself through a 3-year course at university. I might get a part-time job or do some work during the course of it. But to be honest, Leslie, I haven't got the patience to spend day in, day out reading about something anymore. It would just be too boring. You know, life's very exciting sometimes in the work we do. We meet very famous people and we like exchanging views with people. We like communicating like we are now. How could you settle down as a, you know, as a sort of dormant academic after all of that?
Well, I suppose it depends on where you are in your life. You're obviously not ready for that settling down moment.
No, definitely not. No, definitely not. Absolutely right. Okay, folks, you're listening to Life on Planet Porky. I am the Porkmeister, Mr. Parry. I have Leslie Ann Jones with me, of course. And Leslie Ann, I have to say, we're getting some fantastic responses to this podcast, Life on Planet Porky. The figures for our last one hit a record number of people who are tuning in and listening. So I want to offer a big thank you to all of those out there. And they do respond very nicely, particularly to yourself, Leslie Ann. They think that you're the good cop and I'm the bad cop.
It's well, I think it's probably it evens out, doesn't it, over time. But I do enjoy the banter so much.
Yes.
Please keep it coming because it brightens my day, especially at the moment
when
I am glued to a PC, committed to another book.
Yes, indeed. Of course you are. And of course, portraying you as a nun in our last podcast.
Oh, come on. Yeah. I tell you, he was very amused by that. It was the rector at St. Bride's.
Oh, yes. Of course, she's a lady, isn't she? Yes, that's right.
She's very much a lady, yes.
Yeah, I see. Yeah. Well, you know, she probably knows you better than anybody, so that's probably why she was smirking and laughing.
I doubt she thinks I look very good in the habit.
Well, yeah, probably right. Now, talking about nuns and the opposite of nuns, what do you think about the whole of the Kardashian family in the middle of a world pandemic suddenly deciding to go and hire an island somewhere in the Caribbean, so private that they won't let you know where they are, and then just delivering day after day, you know, amazingly glamorous pictures of themselves in bikinis, splashing around in the water, you know, having exotic cocktails? I mean, do you think it's the right time and place for that to be going on?
Of course it isn't. How revoltingly out of touch these women are.
Really?
You know, yes, most people are struggling. Most people have no money. They're not working. They're worried about putting food on the table for their kids during half term. Mm. And these people are flaunting their wealth.
Yeah.
Okay, it's fine that they're rich. Off you go. Have a nice holiday. But please don't torment the rest of us with it.
Yeah. Well, you see, I'm a bit torn here. I don't like hammering success. I think that success should be embraced, it should be endorsed, and we should all take an example from it, because the way the world works is if we all try a bit harder and we all start succeeding, the world will be a better place for us all. We'll achieve more, the world will be wealthier, the economy would pick up. So, you know, I don't like hammering people who are successful. However, there is time and place. And for instance, they put out a picture yesterday and the caption to it was, "Girls just want to have sun." So, you know, it really is a sort of taunting those who are locked up in a council flat somewhere, self-isolating.
Of course it is. These are not normal times and people are desperate.
Yes.
And we could be facing a 30-year recession.
Mm, golly, don't worry about it.
I just don't feel that it's appropriate to flaunt one's wealth right now.
No, I totally agree. Talking about wealth, by the way, it looks like Meghan and Harry might be taking a backward step in one of these legal challenges, doesn't it?
Yeah, she's decided to request for it to be parked.
Yeah.
Her case against, Associated Newspapers, essentially, isn't it? The Mail on Sunday. And I think they're going to quietly back out and that this lawsuit will mysteriously go away and we won't hear about it anymore.
Yeah.
Because I think she's realised that she can't win.
Yeah. No, I don't.
They've got too much evidence. They've got too much paperwork.
Yeah.
Her father clearly did give those letters, her private letters, to Caroline Graham of the Mail on Sunday and whoever else was involved.
Yeah.
And so having discovered that she can't win this, she's going to use the COVID situation to quietly walk away from it. And we're all supposed to forget that she ever brought the case.
Yeah, I think the main point that she's frightened of becoming public is how much she and Harry were directly involved in the book that came out. What was it called? Finding Peace or something.
Finding freedom, wasn't
finding
it?
Finding freedom, that's right, yeah.
But that's going to come out anyway, because sooner or later, one of those writers will crack.
Yes.
I don't think that book has made as much money as they predicted it was going to make.
No, I agree. I think they were shocked to find that, you know, they weren't suddenly the centre of everybody's attention and people are actually getting rather more fed up with them than anything else.
Also, we read it all in the newspapers. It was serialised so comprehensively.
Yeah.
If you don't like Meghan and Harry, why would you buy a book about them?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Totally agree. Now then, do you remember Denny Lane?
Oh, yeah. I knew Denny Lane pretty well.
Oh, good. I was going to ask you about that because, of course, when Paul McCartney and the Beatles split up, Paul McCartney got right back on the road. He drove a white van up to Nottingham University and did an impromptu concert up there after collecting a few sort of random musicians. He then formed Wings, and his sort of wingman in Wings was Denny Lane, wasn't it?
Amazing guitarist, former Moody Blue.
Yeah.
Do you remember the great hit Go Now? That was Denny Lane.
Now, did he write that or did he just arrange it from somebody else's composition?
I believe he co-wrote it.
That's what I mean, because I remember the opening to it on the piano. Dum, 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 da, dum, 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 the goodbye.
It's an extraordinary song. It doesn't go quite like that, but extraordinary song.
Good
guy, Denny Lane. He's got a flat in St. John's Wood, and I went there a few times for mad parties.
Mad parties, eh?
He was married to JoJo Lane.
Tell us more.
in a minute. Yeah,
parties, please.
Yeah, in a minute. No, all we they did a gig in a pub up in St. John's Wood somewhere.
Yeah,
with a bunch of friends. This is going back, and the details are very hazy.
Yes,
but I remember we went back to Denny's flat, and he lives in America most of the time. He's married to a bit of a Rottweiler these days, who was trying to reboot his career, and it didn't actually happen.
Right.
His daughter is Heidi Jo Hines, who's a friend of mine. And Heidi Jo Hines. And her mum was JoJo Lane. Do you remember? Who was one of the most glamorous kind of quasi groupies. She was kind of a step up from a groupie, really.
She was the ultimate rock chick, wasn't she?
Very glamorous, very gorgeous.
She
woman,
and
wasn't she?
Ronnie Wood's wife, JoJo Wood, was it?
Joe Wood. And she sadly died of a drug overdose. But we all went back to Denny's anyway and had this very...
Joe Lane died of a drug overdose, did she?
Yeah, she did, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But he had some amazing posters, framed posters on the walls in his flat that of... they were posters that had never gone public.
Right.
You know, they try things out when they've got an album coming out and this kind of thing. And this was for Wings albums.
Right.
And he had these gigantic framed posters that I'd never seen in public because they hadn't ended up being used.
Right.
And they must be worth a fortune.
Yeah, they must.
Because they were, you know, unpublished poster photographs that never saw the light of day. So I was coveting those.
Mm.
And then he sort of went off the side. He and Paul McCartney fell out really badly.
What was that over?
Because, Denny and Paul were joined at the hip.
Yeah.
He wrote Mull of Kintyre. And he gave away the rights to Paul, which was a big mistake because that would have been his pension.
Oh, no, hang on. Paul McCartney wrote Mull of Kintyre.
Denny Lane wrote Mull of Kintyre.
What, the words and the music or both?
Yeah, he had a major part in the creation of that song.
Wow.
But he gave away his share of it to Paul anyway. And massive hit. Do you remember?
Rolling in from the sea, my desire. Yeah, I know that word for word.
There's a lovely video of that, which was shot up in Mull, where Paul and Linda had a farmhouse.
Yes.
And you see them walking along the beach, Paul and Denny and Linda together. And then they sort of join this bonfire with all these children standing around. And the McCartney kids are in that little clip as well. It's a wonderful piece. And it was a massive hit, of course, Mull of Kintyre. But Denny was approached by a Sun reporter some years ago.
Yeah.
And he ill-advisedly talked at length to this Sun reporter and gave away a lot of personal detail about Paul and Linda.
Mm.
And Paul cut him off just like that. That was the end of it. He never spoke to him again.
Really?
So he sacrificed his career. He could be playing with Paul McCartney to this day.
Yeah.
And but he threw it away for the sake of $3,000 from the Sun.
Good God, is that how he broke up? He broke up? Isn't that terribly sad? Yeah, because you're absolutely right. I mean, he was the mainstay of the band. I met him a couple of times, but just, I don't know where, you know, receptions or something like that. Always thought he was a very amiable sort of a bloke. And you know, I wondered why he'd ever... Now, there's always rumours with Paul McCartney, and this happens to lots of rich rock stars like Mick Jagger and Sir Rod Stewart, that they're terribly mean. And there was a story that Denny wasn't get paid enough and that he was, he was on a salary rather than on shared royalties and all that kind of stuff. And that came from a few of the other musicians, which sort of fell in and fall out of Wings. But in fairness to these rock stars, if they gave money to everybody who wanted it, they'd all go bust, wouldn't they?
Well, of course. I mean, you know, there was some criticism of Paul and Ringo, wasn't there, when the Cavern Club in Liverpool got a big handout from the government's sort of, you know, help the venues back on their feet scheme.
Yeah.
And people were saying, well, look, why don't McCartney and Starr put the money up themselves for the club that started their careers?
Yes.
And that money that the government paid out could have gone to a grassroots club much more in need.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I mean, the left, right and centre people are asking for money and that's it. Anyway, the reason we mentioned Denny Lane is he's reached the grand old age of 76. And you're right, it's a pity. I haven't heard him doing anything lately. But you say he now lives back in America, yeah?
Well, he's married to an American. And he's a Midlander originally.
Is he? Yeah.
I think he's from the Black Country, somewhere like that.
But I don't know why, but I saw him once at somewhere we went and his... A pal of his was driving his Ferrari. I remember that very well. He had a blood red Ferrari. But anyway, there we go. Talking about birthdays, by the way. Simon Le Bon and Yasmin Le Bon have got birthdays on successive days. And Simon Le Bon, 62, and Yasmin Le Bon is 56, and described in a birthday tribute as one of the most beautiful runway models that has ever been.
She still is. I saw them, would have been the year before last now, I guess. This was a mad evening. Duran Duran launched their own collection of perfumes.
Oh.
Don't laugh.
Oh, yeah,
and
exactly,
the party was an absolute splash of a bash at the in the sort of basement of Liberty, the department store.
Yeah.
And it was an American thing. And I was invited because their manager is an old friend of mine, Wendy Laister.
Mm.
She's actually the cousin of Nick Rhodes in the band.
Right.
Although we're not allowed to say that.
Yes.
I just did. And some perfume creator had approached them with this idea.
Right.
And they brought out these four perfumes. They were named after different songs. So there was one called Hungry Like the Wolf, and I can't remember the other ones.
Hungry Like the Wolf, I remember very, very well, yes.
It was just the most ridiculous evening. But anyway, the point being that Yasmin was there, being 54, I guess she would have been at the time, and she still looks the same.
Yeah, right. I mean,
whatever she's on, I want some.
Really? That's an enduring marriage, though, isn't it?
Yeah, very much. Mick Jagger actually tried to get her for himself.
Oh, really?
And, yes, crawled over Simon Le Bon to try and get a date with her.
The dirty dog.
Yes, the dirty dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you'd turn Mick Jagger down now, wouldn't you?
Well, I'm not a homosexual, so I don't know.
Is that right? Okay.
Sorry, but I mean, so I don't know about the appeal of men who are getting towards 80, even if they are gigantic rock stars. But when you talk about crawling over Simon Le Bon, in Eric Clapton's book, you'll know this better than me, doesn't Clapton reveal that he was once in bed with the woman who is now the wife of the former French president, Sarkozy, right?
Oh, Nicolas Sarkozy. What was her name? Carla Bruni.
Carla Bruni, who was then the world's most famous model. And afterwards, Eric Clapton said to Mick Jagger, because Mick Jagger had a habit of always wanting other people's girlfriends, and he said, please, Mick, not this time, Mick, you know, this is special. And Mick said, yeah, don't, Eric, you've got nothing to worry about with me, pal. I'm, you know, I'm your friend and all that. And then immediately set out to seduce, successfully, Carla Bruni.
Bruni.
Bruni, yeah.
Yeah, she got Bruin the bear. But, I mean, look, she did put it around a bit. She had everyone.
That's a bit harsh, isn't it? Hey, she's putting it around a bit, is she? Old Mick Jagger, mega shagger, you know, you're not criticising him, are you? I'm standing up for women's rights here.
Yeah, but we know about Mick Jagger. He's a slag, isn't he?
Slag. That's, dear me, that's a shocking
word. That's an old-fashioned word.
Yeah. Well, when you say that, but I mean, that was a terribly unfriendly thing to do to Eric Clapton, wasn't it?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, yes, but that's the thing that drives Jagger's art, isn't it? Seduction.
Well, I think it's She's Yours But I Want Her is probably a bit of the driving, isn't it? I'm Mick Jagger, so therefore, you know,
I can have any woman I want.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
the older they get, the harder they have to try to prove themselves, and they start to lose their mojo.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying. You know, they've got to try even harder to get these women in their beds.
Talk about them changing those pills they used to take for the little blue pills of old age, are you?
Did you ever take one of those?
What?
Viagra.
No, for goodness sake. I mean, this is a family show. You can't be talking about things like...
I'm only asking.
Well, I mean, you know, that's a highly personal question for one thing. But goodness me, you want to reveal this to the world? Supposing I just said yes, then I'd have been a laughing stock for the rest of my life, wouldn't I? Eh? Good God.
Yeah, sorry, I take it back.
Yeah, exactly. Now, talking about beautiful women, it is revealed that the lady in Lay Lady Lay, a song written by Bob Dylan, which I thought was a very un-Dylan-esque-like song, was actually written because he was obsessively in love with Barbara Streisand.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's an interesting one.
Yeah. Dylan letters lay Lady myth to the rest. For half a century, the identity of the woman Bob Dylan wanted on his big brass bed, that was the words of the song apparently, has been kept a secret. Now unearthed letters written by the singer have revealed Barbara Streisand inspired Lay Lady Lay. Contrary to speculation, the song was written for the film Midnight Cowboy, The singer confided that actually it was written for Barbara Streisand. Now, Barbara Streisand is a strange one. She is universally admired for her skill and her talent and all that, but I can't quite work it out. She's only ever had about two hit songs, hasn't she?
Oh, no, she's an icon, isn't she? I mean, when she came here 2 or 3 years ago to do a massive show at the O2,
yeah,
you could not get tickets for love nor money. She's massively popular, more of an album artist, I would say.
Right.
You know, less of a pop single artist. You wouldn't expect to see her on the pop charts all that much, but an enduring evergreen, also an actress, you know, so...
Yeah.
Probably more people would know her from her films, I would imagine.
Yes.
But what a consummate professional. My father adored her.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you have all the Barbara Streisand albums?
Yeah, no, I've got them all now because I inherited my father's record collection.
Blimey. Yeah, maybe.
Yes, I've got them all downstairs.
Yeah.
What an incredible woman. Quite a strange-looking woman, you'd have to say. But
what you're trying to say is she's quite ugly.
No, she's not ugly. She's what the French would call jolie laide, which is pretty ugly, actually, if you translate it, yeah.
I thought jolie laide was going to be big nose, because she had a big nose, didn't she?
No, well, the thing I admire about her is that she never did fix her nose.
No.
She used to have photographs taken in profile and sort of promote her nose as part of her identity, which was a very clever thing to do.
Yeah, Cilla Black did it the other way. She sort of disfigured her nose, didn't she, with an operation?
Yeah, she did. Yeah,
you know,
I don't approve of cosmetic surgery. My son was saying to me yesterday,
"Oh yes,
I'm really upset that I've got your childbearing hips."
Really?
He said, "If I make a lot of money, I'm going to have them shaved off." I said, "Henry, you can't shave off hips.
No,
you know, you can tone these things up in the gym or whatever, but you can't change your basic shape."
Yes. Yeah,
there's no point. And also, that's not what surgery is for, by the way.
No,
surgery is for life-saving, life-preserving reasons. I think it's immoral to change anything about your body with surgery.
Oh, well, that's nice to hear. But it's also to correct things that are wrong in your body. If you're born with, you know, you hear all these great stories about people born with their feet the wrong way around and all this kind of
thing. That's what I mean. That's a legitimate reason to have something surgical done about it.
Sure.
But I don't think just because you don't like the shape of your nose that you go having it broken and reset. That's a horrible thing to do.
Well, unless you're Michael Jackson, I suppose, in which case you'd have it broken, reset.
Yeah, but look at what a freak he ended up like.
I mean,
his face at close... point blank range was it was horrifying.
Yeah.
It was like something out of a Halloween film. It was awful.
And do you know what? You can tell when people have had lots of cosmetic work as they get older, because I noticed a picture of a female actress the other day who I won't name because I do not wish to embarrass, but I could see her face was starting to show signs of an enormous amount of work over the years. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. But I mean, Botox, what a horrible thing that is.
Yeah, absolutely horrible. There's a worse...
I always feel like saying to those women, you've had enough pricks in your face to last a lifetime.
Oh, Miss Jones, come on. I mean...
Family show.
Yeah, it very much is so. I mean, goodness gracious me. Remember, it's not just you've got a reputation to lose, you know. I've got a reputation as well. But there's also the... Was it you who told me there's some particular form of Botox people went crazy on a couple of years ago, which is irremovable and settles under the skin like cement? And you can never
We talked about Dave Clark.
Yeah,
do you remember Dave Clark Five? And he had some dental work that had left his cheeks very sunken.
Yeah.
So he went and had these sort of cheek implants, augmentations done. And then he went... Ridiculously, he went on a sunbed and the implants melted and then they crystallized under his skin.
Oh,
so he ended up with all these lumps, hard little lumps of like injected concrete, which made him look like, oh, God, Boris Karloff's, you know, the monster. He looked like a freak and there was nothing anybody could do about it.
A friend of mine who knew him in the sort of music business said he literally ended up looking like Elephant Man. And he had a face like an elephant and there's nothing you could do about it.
Yeah, but, good description. Yeah, poor guy.
Anyway, listen.
So that is an advert for never doing it, right?
I totally agree. Your great writing friend, Liz Jones, I think she's the greatest columnist that I read these days, because you're not writing a column at the moment. You're writing books, Ms. Jones. But honestly, I think her columns are fantastic. What about this one here? She just sums up, right? Just the things that are currently worrying her, okay? We all have a few problems in life, don't we? You know, we worry about things. Hers are that somebody she fancies has got wind of my column and is really cross because she always writes about people in her column. Number two, my rescue pony Benji will get colic again. Number three, is my sister in Sydney okay? I haven't heard anything from her for about a year. Number four, has my avocado ripened? Number five, there's something weird under my car and scraping on the road and making sparks as I drive along, but she's chosen not to do anything about it. Number six, my puppy Minnie is off her food. Number seven, the past 10 years have been too much for me. Just when I start to get my head above water and have hope, a great big hand pushes me down under again. Number eight, I'm off my food from stress and uncertainty. Number nine, I'm too worried to tell you what happened, but might have the courage next week. Number 10, there is something else, but I've just forgotten what it is because I'm so confused. Now,
I love this woman. She's my soul sister. Yeah. She absolutely is. She has the guts to express all the little things that we're all worried about all the time, but we wouldn't want to expose those things in public.
Absolutely. But I mean, that is living in turmoil. I feel sorry for her because if she's walking around with all those doubts and fears and concerns in her head all the time, there can't be much room for a bit of light and you know, a bit of sunshine in her life, can there?
Ah, but she has the magic thing called a column, and she can expunge all of her worries and share them with millions of people, thus freeing up space in her head to concentrate on some fun things.
Well, good for her, because I do adore her as a writer. I think she's fantastic. It's just not so much write as sort of imprint her thoughts on her mind onto paper. You know what I mean? In a way, not many of us can. Anyway, there we go. So, Ms. Jones, that's another Planet Porky come to an end. Thank you very much indeed for having joined me. People can get hold of you where?
On Twitter at LAJ Writer.
And myself at Mike Parriade. Folks, thank you very much indeed for tuning in, and we will be back with you again very soon. Talking about stalkers, by the way, I was devastated when I realised I'd missed a trick. You're talking about stalkers here, and Agnetha of ABBA married her stalker, didn't she?
I didn't know that.
Yes, she did, yeah. What happened was, you know, she wanted to be alone, sort of Greta Garbo style, after the breakup of ABBA. So she bought an island that you could only get to by a footbridge or something, right? Because there's loads of islands in Sweden. Every decent, you know, Swedish businessman's got his own island. Sven Horan Eriksson, the former England manager, he had his own island. And she bought this island, but then this stalker turned up for years. And guess what? She ended up marrying him. So I thought, wow, what an idiot I am. If I'd have gone and stalked Agnetha for a couple of years, I might have ended up marrying her. Talk about them changing those pills they used to take for the little blue pills of old age, are you?
Did you ever take one of those?
What?
Viagra.
No, for goodness sake. I mean, this is a family show. You can't be talking about things like...
I'm only asking.
I mean, you know, that's a highly personal question for one thing. But goodness me, you want to reveal this to the world? Supposing I just said yes, then I'd have been a laughing for the rest of my life, wouldn't I? Eh? Good God.
Yeah, sorry, I take it back. I mean, you'd turn Mick Jagger down now, wouldn't you?
I'm not a homosexual, so I don't know.
Is that right? Okay.
But I mean, so I don't know about the appeal of men who are getting towards 80, even if they are gigantic rock stars.